From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in a third grade classroom in the city of Rochester. The morning bell rang and the teacher looked around the room, and nearly a quarter of the seats were empty, a sign of chronic absence. And for the students who were in attendance, many were still struggling to read. That's just one of the portraits painted by the new Rock the Future annual report card. The organization puts the focus on three areas in particular: school readiness, early grade literacy, and high school graduation. And some of the indicators are a little grim in those areas, but there are also signs of progress. More parents are getting involved. The graduation rate is creeping upward, and there are mixed signs on early literacy. Not all bad. So why is it that some kids in our community still suffer in many of these areas? And the answer, it starts with poverty, of course. That's not wrong. But can we be more specific? Do we know what's working to start to change the outcomes? Our guest this hour will review the annual report card, give us a sense for where we are with the state of children in our community. Jackie Campbell is the director of Rock the Future. Jackie, welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Also with us is Sean Nelms, who is the superintendent of East EPO and chair of Rock the Future Conveners. Welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Also with us is Ajamu Katwana, who is an immediate past chair of Rock the Future and the VP and director of community impact for ESL. Thanks for being here.
Hello. Thanks.
And also with us is Stephanie Townsend, who is the director of research and analytics for Rock the Future. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you, Evan.
I want to start with you, Jackie, but I want everybody to kind of weigh in on this. Take me out of the mindset that says, well, you can do what you do every year, good luck, but if poverty isn't changing much, we're not going to see the results change much, because poverty is the driving factor behind so much of what we see as suffering in our community, particularly with kids. No? Yes?
I do think that poverty plays a role, and I also know that other communities have addressed this very same issue and have been able to move forward, but really, we have a lot of work to do in our community overall. So it's as it relates to kids doing well academically, it's not just about what the school district is doing. It's about how are we affirming and lifting up education and literacy for all of our children in the community. And poverty does impact it. What can we do about it?
Okay. Stephanie, what do you think?
Poverty definitely plays a role, but I think that when we emphasize that too much, then what we're implying is that children who live in poverty can't learn. And that's just not correct. We have examples all over the country of school districts that have very similar rates of poverty who are excelling. So I think we need to avoid that trap of thinking that poverty is deterministic.
Okay. Ajamu?
Again, I wouldn't want to change your mind on that. That's a fact. Poverty is an important factor. That's why Leonard Brock from the Rochester Moore Anti-Poverty Initiative is a convener. That's why the United Way, several community leaders who are also working on poverty are part of the work of Rock the Future. At the same time, Rock the Future is about supporting a continuous improvement process, given what we are doing right now. So yes, poverty is a factor. Some of our actions will address that. At the same time, we're focused on improving teaching and learning as well.
Okay, Dr. Nelms.
I would say that poverty, by its own definition, is somewhat a difficult place to start with the conversation, because we often make poverty about the individuals who are impoverished, and without talking about the systems and structures that led them to being impoverished. So if we look at the history of the city school district and how our families experienced it, and for those who did not graduate, had alarming graduation rates, then that creates a cycle of poverty that doesn't give them access to quality jobs, to health care, to college. And so if we're going to talk about poverty as an issue, we have to talk about all of the structural issues that led to that. And I think Rock the Future provides a group of conveners that are really talking about the systemic issues and trying to find solutions and pathways out of poverty through education, starting with CRADL and then through college and career.
Hmm. Well, so let's get specific. And let's start in an optimistic way here. Jackie, what's the most encouraging thing to you in this report?
Well, I think that there are a lot of encouraging things about the report this year. The high school graduation rate is trending in the right direction. I do think that we have highlighted a few partnerships that are really supporting the work overall. So as I think about the report card itself, it's a snapshot of what is actually happening, but the work itself is really encouraging. And the thing that's really encouraging for me is parents and family members wanting to be engaged and be at the table. And we've sort of worked on a process to actually give opportunity for that.
On your report card results, you write about parent engagement. 83% of teens have clear family rules, and 79% say they get support when they need it. How does that square with the goals here? How is that?
Well, Stephanie, you want to take that one?
Yeah.
That, I think, is a really important factor to keep in mind, is that I think too often our community is blaming parents and families. And the fact is, these are hardworking families, hardworking parents who are providing for their children and providing structure and expectations, as those responses from students indicate. What to me is far more troubling is the fact that only 52% of students say that they feel like they matter to people in their community. So to me, that speaks to this is... We need to support families, absolutely. But we need to look a little more critically at ourselves as a community. And what are we doing to support especially our adolescents, who are the ones who gave those responses?
I'm going to assume that if you ask kids in Pittsford, they would have a higher number than 52% saying that I think people in the community care about me. Do you agree with that guess?
I do, and in fact, I looked at those numbers a few weeks ago, but I can't remember off the top of my head what the number was.
I'm assuming that wealthier suburban districts, kids feel differently about what the community thinks about them or whether it cares about them. Why do you think kids in the suburbs are going to feel differently about what the community thinks, whether the community cares, versus what kids in the city of Rochester feel?
Wow. That's an important question. I think that some of it is, my hypothesis would be that some of that is due to the stress that families and community members are under. When you are growing up in a community that is a lot more economically advantaged, then there's simply more people have more time to be around and to demonstrate their care and concern. You have more people available, more adults available in more different settings. That's harder in communities where there's a lot of poverty because people are spending so much time working and going from job to job. They just simply can't be around to volunteer as the coaches or volunteer at the rec center. So I would guess that may be part of it, is simply the accessibility mm-hmm. of adults.
Okay.
But there's probably something more to it, and we really need to scratch further beneath that surface and really hear from youth in the community.
Well, Sean talked about these systemic challenges of poverty, and there's probably something systemic that even if a 10-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 14-year-old can't articulate, whether they're in the suburbs or the city or wherever they're growing up, why they feel whether the community cares. They get a sense through the actions and through what they experience. And there's probably something systemic that is signaling to kids mm-hmm. whether they matter. What do you think?
I think that's probably a better way of describing it. I think comparing kids by geography is probably doesn't get at the root of your question, mm-hmm. in terms of, mm-hmm. I think the better question is for kids who feel a lack of care, regardless if they're in rural areas or suburban areas or cities, like what's causing them to feel a disconnect? And then what are the systems within the community that are designed to help support them? So if it's a school counselor or social workers or an agency that's has a presence in the community, like to what extent are they not only visibly present in the community, but active in the community. And what we do at Rock the Future is to challenge our conveners to be actionable in with their responses to our children and their families. So it's no longer are we going to just be great admirers of the problem, but trying to move in a direction of taking actions towards resolving it. And so I would say that for students who hurt or for students who feel a disconnect, Now is the time for organizations like ESL, for United Way, and for RMAPI to come together and to coalesce around the issues of those children. We also have, as a convener, individuals from the Greater Rochester Health Foundation. And they provided three mental health supports at East last year, for the last 3 years, I should say, to focus on students who scored very, very high on the adverse childhood experiences scale. And they have worked through, you can't change kids who had traumatic experience, but you can support their resiliency. And so we acknowledged that we had kids who were not having their deep emotional needs met. And one of our conveners stepped in and provided a pilot program for us for 3 years. And now we're sharing that learning with other schools throughout Monroe County. And so I think that the way in which we coalesce around problems and our partners become more active in our schools, then students will actually not only see that they're cared for, but they will also start to experience it. And I think that's part of the problem within our greater community is that we're not identifying and labeling the work so that children and families understand the impact of our efforts.
What do you, John, you want to jump in? Go ahead, please.
I do want to jump in on that a little bit. So one, just to clarify and point out, so 51% of young people agree that I matter to people in the community, distinguishing that from the 79% that feel like my family gives me help mm-hmm. and support when I need it. So this is not about what the parents are doing or not doing. This is the perception of the community. And so I think to change that, we have to change the conversation we have about young people in the city, in our community. We have to listen to young people around what they celebrate what is working. Most of the conversations we have around young adults, young people in our community are about fights after football games. Right. Or, you know, but they're doing a lot of great things in our community. One program we, ESL, was fortunate to support through the Gandhi Institute is a Bright Spots program. And they're spending some time with schools in RCSD to go and with young people to just observe what's happening, what's working well among young people in schools, among teachers, et cetera, and gathering data, real data around positive things that's happening in their schools. And they've talked about the really surprise even of people in that building around the energy and being surprised about so much positive work going on. So I think to change that is really us as community stakeholders. We have to change the way we talk about our young people, the way we engage, and spend more energy lifting up the positive things that young people are doing in our community.
What encourages you most from this report card?
What encourages me most from this report card is that most of the indicators that we're tracking are moving in a positive direction. They aren't where we want them to be. We'd love to be at or above state averages, but early literacy, high school graduation, school readiness, ninth graders on track, to see these numbers moving in a positive direction consistently. This isn't a blip with just this year is going up, but we've seen year after year after year improvement. Frankly, I think if you listen to the dialogue around education in Rochester, you would not understand what the data is saying.
Well, particularly in the last year when we talk about, you know, calls for a state takeover of a school board and talk about a failing district. So I think what I'm hearing you say is if you freeze in just in one moment in time and you take a look at all the indicators, no one is satisfied that this is where you want to get to.
That's right.
But if you look at the last 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, most of them are in the direction that you want.
Yep. The only way to get to where we want to get is to keep moving in a positive direction until we get there. And it's great to see that a lot of the indicators are doing just that.
And then why is the rhetoric so negative?
We've got a narrative in our community around failure. And, you know, I don't have the magic bullet answer to it. I think part of it is folks not spending enough time really looking at what's going on, not spending enough time looking at the data, nor listening to young people, nor having an authentic conversation around what's happening in our schools. But it's a mystery.
Well, and, you know, yesterday on this program, School Board President Van White and Commissioner Beatriz LeBron were joking that, you know, that they disagreed on some stuff. And, you know, I was looking for some juicy disagreement. And I said, actually, you know, I'm much more interested in sort of the drier, boring stuff because that's kind of who I am and that's not what this program's about. But sometimes you have to ask hard questions even when they're uncomfortable. And to the idea that in the last year we've seen all this talk about state takeover, failing schools, it definitely furthers the perception that the indicators are not going in the right direction. And Jackie, I know Stephanie wants to hit some of the data. I just want to ask you, Jackie, I mean, the mayor put out a video to kids directed to students and told them that you've got school leaders who don't want you to succeed. That's a hard message for kids to hear. I mean, is that the appropriate message right now, given the indicators we're hearing? What do you think? How do you square that?
So I don't know if I would say that's not the appropriate message, but I would also say that there is more that really does need to be shared with young people and the community. The fact of the matter is that we are moving in the right direction, but for many people in our community, not just the mayor, that the progress is too slow, that we actually should be doing more and doing it faster. But in terms of a narrative for young people, also has to be how we can actually get involved and change things. And so earlier this year, we did have this conversation about the state involvement in RCSD. And one of the things that happened was really quick and swift. We heard back from the community about not having this conversation absent from community. So one of the real bright spots is having the community actually say, yeah, we're interested. We just really are not sure what our role is and how we can, you know, what's the appropriate place for us and actually what else is going on, because the other piece of it is how well are we communicating to the larger community about all of the improvement. And so it's easy to sort of highlight when things go bad, and we've had a lot of things to highlight, but we have so much good that's also going on at the same time. And so how do we lift that up and lift a shared message of, yeah, it's going to take some work and it's going to take some time to improve. And I would say, you know, we look at the report card. I think this last week we had a phenomenal event, and we had someone from Tacoma, Washington, that actually shared they were in a similar place that we are now. And actually we've improved since last 4 years when I came on board. But this work is happening in other communities, and we can also take a page out of what it is that they're doing. So I think that there are ways that we can message improvement better in the community.
Okay, Stephanie, I know you've been wanting to jump in here. Hit it.
Yeah. Well, when you raise about this narrative of failure, and I think it's striking that narrative is around, as you said, things like the school board, state takeover. That's a narrative about the adults, not a narrative about the students. And that's part of why that narrative of failure is there, is we're talking about schools and education outcomes and not talking about or with the students. Even your part of the reason I stumbled at the top of the show with your question about, well, why do students feel like adults in the community don't care about them? I don't have that answer, but the children and the youth in our community do have that answer. And that's where we really, I think, need to be focusing more on the students.
Hearing them.
And hearing them.
Yeah.
Not only hearing them, but following them. They are the ones who know what we can do differently to make them feel like they matter. There's also from that same survey that those questions about family and community came from. There is also a question about whether or not you feel supported in your school. Only 63% of students said they felt supported in their school. So again, that tells me our focus needs to shift from being about the adults to being about the students. And when we do that, I think we are going to see a shift in that narrative of failure.
All right, as we talk about the annual State of Our Children report card release from Rock the Future, let me grab our first phone call. It's from Canandaigua. This is Matt. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So, education, I would say, is probably two-thirds from community and home and one-third teacher and school board. Rochester has a population of 186,000. The average income is $32,000. 33% of people are living in poverty. I think that we need to redefine what we consider as work. Is it just going to be stuff that's economic value? Or what about people that are volunteering, stay-at-home parents, things like that, that, you know, don't have value to the stock market and these other things, but they still add value to our community. And if parents aren't working 2-3 jobs to survive, maybe they would have more attention toward their children, you know, as they're growing up, and would make us a stronger society. What do you think?
All right, Matt, thanks for the phone call. Thoughts from our guests. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Actually, Matt is pretty well right on target with the two-thirds, one-third. Research nationally has consistently shown that about one-third of that educational outcomes is about what happens in schools, and about two-thirds is about what happens outside of schools, which is, again, it's why this is not a school district problem alone. It is a community problem. And that's one thing that at Rock the Future we're trying to do, is to pivot that focus away. I mean, the school district needs to do what the school district needs to do, but that's up to them. We need to shift our efforts and focus on what are each one of us doing individually and organizationally and systemically in the community to support our young people.
Sure. To that point, I mean, if there's a child who is in the third grade and essentially cannot read, my first reaction is not, well, what are they doing in the schools? That is a complex problem that has roots in a lot of different directions. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk a little bit about reading, because we know this is a huge one. And this is on the list of continued challenges. I'm going to read under your section on third grade reading. The drop from pre-K students being school ready to RCSD having extremely low literacy rates in third grade calls for close study of what occurs between years K to three. I mean, Stephanie, if we're on this point, I mean, we can study what happens between K to three, but what do we at least have an idea that is already happening? Because it's not just what's happening in the classroom, it's what's happening in those kids' lives, right?
It is, and that's where at the community level, we need to become much more explicitly and in action a community that values and supports literacy. It's about it, and we all have a role to play in that. We have some great examples in this community. There are barbershops that have literacy corners, and where there are books for the kids, and the barber has the kids read books to them while they're getting their hair cut. That is a profound statement to that child about the importance of literacy, and that is what we do in our community. There's a number of laundromats that likewise have set up literacy corners. In other communities in this country, they've actually gone a step farther and have programs where librarians are at the laundromats doing literacy activities with the children and the parents while they wait for their laundry. So those are just emblematic of what we mean when we say the community needs to be needs to value literacy, that becomes part of the everyday what children do with people that they interact with. The faith communities, likewise, are another place where we really could be, through all the work they do with youth, promoting and supporting the idea of literacy. And literacy isn't only about reading books, though. There's many kinds of literacy. So that's where engaging with our arts community, spoken word, the visual arts, performing arts, that is how we build literacy.
Okay. Jackie?
I would also say that there is, and this is one of the things that we have been thinking about over time, is that we have we measure literacy by one point in time, an assessment, an annual assessment. And there are many ways. So Stephanie pointed out, literacy is not just about one particular skill set. It's a compilation of several of those things. And so there is another way, other ways that we can actually look at how well children are doing. And so when we talk about the early grade literacy rate, we have to really unpack what that actually means and what it is that we're saying. The other thing is that what we have found is, from the community perspective, there are many ways that the community plays a role and that the community supports our schools in terms of moving forward. So we're trying to investigate and lift up all of those ideas, what's happened in other areas. The big thing for us is we're trying to figure out how else do we measure literacy for young people and not just this once.
Well,
once a year assessment.
Jackie, one of the things I appreciate when we talk about the annual report cards is this is a team of people. It's a whole organization and community effort that is optimistic, but you are also realistic. I mean, you're not here spreading propaganda. If the indicators were starting to go in a different direction, I know that you'd come on here and say, we're concerned about this. We're trying to get our heads around it. So on the realistic side of things, what's one of the single indicators that worries you or concerns you the most, that even if it's moving, you want to see it move more? Is it third grade literacy? Is it something else? What is it for you?
I do think it's early grade literacy, because that's the key to everything else. Mm-hmm. But we have to, one, be sort of clear about what that actually means and what we're actually looking at. So a lot of things impact third grade reading. But we have some schools that, if we were to look at the schools, we do have some schools that are very close to the state average within the city school district. So there are opportunities for improvement in terms of what we're doing in schools. But there's also a huge opportunity to engage the full community in this work. So, you know, my thing is, if we were to fix everything that we wanted to, if we had a magic wand and said, you know, we're going to fix the school district and it's going to be perfect, we would still have all of these other challenges that are outside in the community. And to a large degree, we're all responsible for what we need to do. Like, we all have a role to play. The conveners sit around the table and they also think about, it's not just myself as an individual, but what does my organization do to support moving forward? And so everyone has to sort of own their space and their role and how they impact others in the community. But we all have to do this in a shared way. And sort of our collective frame is, how do we move forward as a community? And what role do we all have to play?
Okay. Sean Nelms, of all the indicators you're looking at, what concerns you the most?
Well, I think early grade literacy for many, many years was seen as the predictive point. So if a kid was not third grade ready, then we, as a community, somewhat saw them as not going to be successful throughout high school. And so the point that in the report that concerns me most is the gap between early grade literacy and high school graduation outcomes. So what's happening between grades 4 and grades 12 that we're missing? What's happening with our focus on curriculum to ensure that kids who are behind are caught up? Kids who are on grade level can excel and be even better readers and writers and speakers and listeners. And so how do we do that? And so having conveners like city council, conveners that being the mayor, the school board, the school superintendent, and other education folks from the college community together to think about what's happening to and with our children grades 4 through 12 is a critical point that we don't highlight as much in the report. But we understand that that is a point in time when kids get lost in the system, where parents become disenfranchised in the system, because that's, you know, when kids are not learning, they tend to start to misbehave. Then the only feedback their parents are getting about the school system is how bad their kids are behaving and how much of a distraction they are to the educational environment. What we hope to do through this convening and with a focus from our funders and our community experts, the families, the parents, and the students' voices, is to really target and identify when kids are not successful, what do we do next? Where in the community are there resources that will help students catch up? If it's barbershops, if it's a library, how do we extend the school day in ways that's targeted for the kids who need it most? And then provide the support for them over the weekends, over the summer, over breaks. And that's what makes this organization so unique. I mean, it's built on this premise that there's like no single heroic figure, right? That it's gonna take a collective whole to really focus on school readiness, early grade literacy, and our high school graduation outcomes. And so that in itself, although it's not identified in this report, it's a critical part of our data tracking to ensure that we are not losing kids in between those benchmarks. And because if you do that, then you're not really putting a face with the problem. You know, you're looking at it kind of in the aggregate. And we want to make sure that each child and each family has an advocate for them and are made aware what the resources are within the community to help them.
Okay. Jamma, what stands out to you?
What stands out to me, my biggest concern is around college entrance, college completion. So that's an area where we're not improving consistently. It's the last measure, the last couple measures on the report card. High school graduates that are enrolling in college, those in college that are persisting, those are not going in the right direction. That's the biggest concern for me. As Dr. Nelm said, we have many partners from colleges in the room, Nazareth College, St. John Fisher, U of R, of course. I think we can do a lot more to support those students that do graduate towards in their path towards success. One example, I'll just kind of shout out our partner, MCC, who's across the street here. ESL made a recent investment in MCC specifically to address that issue. So a grant, it's over 5 years, that supports opportunities for students who don't have a diploma to enroll in MCC to get the diploma on their way towards an associate's, and funding to support students who often get to MCC without being college ready and therefore spend a lot of their financial aid time doing remedial courses, support to help those students get the coursework they need and ultimately complete an associate's degree or maybe go on beyond that.
So we talk about Rock the Future. Can we find it online? Can we find the report card online?
Yes,
Jackie
you can.
Campbell?
Rockthefuture.org.
Rockthefuture.org, and you can see the annual report. If you want to email the program, connections@wxxi.org. I'll read a couple of emails after our only break of the hour here. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're talking about Rock the Future's annual report card, The State of Our Children, with Jackie Campbell, the director of Rock the Future. Stephanie Townsend is director of research and analytics for Rock the Future. The convener for Rock the Future, the chair of the convener, she's not the convener, she's one of the conveners, Sean Nelms, who is the superintendent of the East EPO, and Ajamu Katwana is the immediate past chair. He's the VP and the director of community impact for ESL. More of your feedback after our only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, community members from different faith-based groups are teaming up for an interfaith Thanksgiving service. The goal is to create partnerships that will last, and the theme for the next year is planting seeds for a peaceful election year. Election, politics, and peace don't always sound like they go together. How will they do it? We'll talk next hour. This is Connections. I should have mentioned that Ajamu is not only the immediate past chair of Rock the Future, but a new board member for WXXI. And now that I know this, I just want you to know that I'm going to be even harder on you.
I bet.
It's important. So, no, we're always transparent. But I will say, it's wonderful to have you on the board of WXXI and serving the community, and we're grateful for that. So thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. So Michael emailed the program and wanted to know if there is support for schools that have issues with chronic absences, whether it's support for teachers or principals or both. It's a good question, Stephanie.
Sure. A chronic absence is actually a huge issue in the school district.
How do we define what a chronic absence is?
Chronic absence is defined as students who attend less than 90% of school days. So in Rochester, for elementary schools, the rate is 30% of students are chronically absent. At the high schools, it varies depending on the high school, ranging from 31% to 76% of students chronically absent. So that is a huge issue. The school district has actually, I think, a fairly rigorous process in place that adheres to what a lot of the research says is best practice. So parents are called every day if a child has not been reported absent but has not shown up. That is followed up with visits to the door. If they can't get a hold of an adult in the house, someone from the school will actually go out and knock on the door and say, "Where's your child? Why aren't they in school?" When students have been absent a certain number of times, letters are sent home, home visits are done. So there's a fairly rigorous process for addressing that. But the question really was about support for for principals, for teachers, for administrators. And yes, there is support being provided there as well. Rock the Future, in fact, is trying to provide some of that support to Edison High School, where our manager for continuous improvement is working with them and working with the director of attendance for RCSD to look at what they are doing within the school, because they are one of the largest schools that does have a very high chronic absence rate. So we are working with them and providing additional support beyond what the school district provides to all schools.
Sean Nelms, I think this would be instructive to ask you for your experience at East. As the superintendent of East, what are your attendance numbers like? And give me a sense for what support looks like for dealing with chronic absence there.
Yeah, great question. So when we first arrived, the attendance rates were around 73 to 75%. Average daily attendance for the upper school right now, which is grades 9 through 12, that number is closer to 85. And for lower school, grades 6 through 8, the number is around 92. So we have had seen a huge increase in attendance, our average daily attendance, and a decrease in students who have been chronically absent. And it has truly been a community-wide effort. And this is one of the reasons why I joined Rock the Future as a convener from East High School perspective, is we were thinking through, you know, how do we connect with parents in ways that are authentic and honest, that allow them to give us the real story behind the absences? I mean, parents aren't keeping kids home because they don't value education. There are many different cases that we've run into, from the extremes of having bed bugs to having to care for aging parents and grandparents. And so we partner with those we partner with those who are situated with Near East. So Connected Communities is one such entity, a group that we work with. And they go right to the homes and they get the real story. We hire three parents to go to the parents and to have parent-to-parent conversations. Like, tell me what's really going on. I'm not CPS, I'm not law enforcement. I just want to know so we can find the resources to help get your child engaged in school. Another thing I would say is, and I know that Superintendent Dade has mentioned this, and I pushed this a couple years ago as well, is the importance of neighborhood schools and community schools. And so neighborhood schools is more geographically defined, meaning that people live near the school within 2 or 3 miles. And we want to get more kids. When we first got to East, less than 5% of our students lived near East, who attended East High School, because of school choice policy. To date, 4 years later, we have about 35% of our students live near East. And so it's much easier to go to the neighborhoods and walk to those homes when the kids live within a mile from the school, or drive to those homes and have those honest conversations. And so we think neighborhood schools has been a great factor in our attendance rates. But as a community school, that's a different type of structure.
Define that.
So you're looking at how do you bring supports from the community to the school where the kids are, but then also benefits those living within a neighborhood. So it's resources coming to the building. The building becomes at the epicenter of the support. And so, you know, at East, next month we'll be announcing we have two permanent dental chairs that are going to be on East Campus. That's going to be announced pretty soon. Our students create eyeglasses for students throughout all of RCSD. So you walk around our school, a lot of kids are wearing glasses. It's a cool thing to do. They want to look like you, Evan. we have, you have behavioral health support, as I mentioned, with our convener and Greater Rochester Health Foundation. We have a number of social workers and counselors. And so, you know, on and on and on, we partner with Food Link to have a food pantry that is stocked every single week. And so when you have students who live in the neighborhood, and they understand, have access to the community supports, then they see school not just as a space for academic help, but also a place that nurtures them physically, mentally, and socially. And so we have to move towards schools that are within neighborhoods, I believe, but also that connects the community supports and foundations to the priorities that school has identified. And I think that we often forget about the proximity to schools and its impact on student attendance.
That is the best explanation to help explain neighborhood schools and community schools, what they are and how they differ. I'm just going to flag that because this comes up a lot. So I appreciate that greatly. And it makes sense. Two dental chairs, you say.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
I mean, it's really great.
Yeah, so students will get dental support throughout the school day. We have a barbering also. We have a working with a local barbering school. They're going to have a barbering chair there where kids can get their haircut, learn the trade of barbering, but also, you know, get groomed there. And so we just continue to add resources that are of value to our students. And quite frankly, back to your point earlier, Stephanie, it's these are things that kids identified as a need, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, kids want to look and smile and look great, so we get their teeth fixed. You know, they want to be healthy, so mentally healthy, so we get, you know, supports from social workers and counselors in the community. You know, they want to have access to careers. So now we now have six career pathways at East. One that we partner with is with the University of Rochester Medical Careers. I was walking through the classrooms last week, and here you have a fourth-year med student teaching the kids how to dissect the calf's brain. And that's another community support. One young man saw the med student. He had said, I didn't know there were a lot of black doctors. It was a black med student. And so, you know, even giving kids a visual representation of careers through people who look like them becomes important. Mm-hmm. So when I say community, I mean it in the truest sense. It's holistic, and it's giving access to a world that these kids may not know exist at or near the school. But then a neighborhood school model, I don't want to lose that point. I'm a huge proponent for neighborhood schools. I attended a neighborhood school growing up as a youth, and it was so much easier to walk back to the school at night, doing light at schoolhouse back in the 80s and 90s, to go play sports and get reading support and to hear guest speakers. I mean, it was in your community with your peers, and if your parents couldn't take you, your neighbors took you. And so it also reinforced another sense of community within those neighborhoods. And I think that the school can play a pivotal role in moving back towards neighborhood schools and allowing the community to truly be the anchors of support for those children. So to go back to your earlier point, when we ask this question 10 years from now, do you find value in the community? Then these kids might say yes, because those within their community are those that are aiding them in and out, inside and outside of school, which is critically right. important.
That's great.
I think also something that Sean just touched on, it goes back to that idea that this is about systems in the entire community. So one thing that we do hear a lot about with a chronic absence with the older students is that they are staying home to take care of younger children mm-hmm. or grandparents who are ill or something like that. Well, that's where we need to make sure we have the systems in place for access to quality, affordable childcare, because then those high school and middle school students don't have to stay home to take care of the younger siblings. You know, so that's an example of a need that it's not the place for the school to provide that. It is the place for our community, our employers, and our other systems to make sure we have that available.
I want to take a phone call from Victor. Before I do, I'll just say in a moment here, in particular, I want to hear from Ajamu on the question of how you can help. There's a section on the report card, businesses in particular. So when Dr. Nelms is talking about how to create a community school and how to get the actual involvement in that community school, that's one idea. But how else can we all help, and businesses in particular? We'll hit that before the hour's out. I want to snag this phone call from Jen and Victor first, though. Go ahead, Jen.
Okay, I am a psychologist. I have seen a number of children who have been bullied, and some bullied to the point that they try to commit suicide at the suggestion of their peers. The school administrations, and I've met with them from many different school administrations, school districts, do nothing, absolutely nothing. The bullies don't get punished. They don't get suspended. They don't get anything. I'm very concerned because, to me, you know, if you have a really fragile child, even teenager, they can turn to guns and decide, well, I'm going to get back at these people. I also am very concerned that people are feeling like they don't even want to live anymore. They certainly won't go back to school because it's not a safe place. And as a psychologist, I don't know what to do. I've talked to the parents of the children who have been bullied. I've tried to educate kids how not to be bullied, how to react when somebody bullies you. But if somebody is chasing you down the hall and you go into the principal's office and he says, oh, no, it's 3:00, I can't do anything. It's like, I'm just aghast.
Yeah. So Jen, I appreciate that, and I know we all worry and care about our kids, especially when they're vulnerable. Dr. Nelms, I'm going to kick this one to you here.
Yeah, I'll answer quickly because I know we're going to get to Ajamu's response, but I would say I heard it best, that hurt people hurt people. And I think that children are people. And so I think at the root of bullying and the root of students being negative towards one another and to themselves, more importantly, is a cry. It's a call out for us to do something systemically to support them. So, you know, at East, we implemented restorative practices as an opportunity to restore and repair and create relationships between students and staff, and between staff. And so restorative practice is a approach to doing that, but it starts with having the right support system in place that allows children to surface what their hurt is and then provide a number of resources to help them become resilient as they move towards and through that pain. And so I would say that bullying definitely is an issue that's national, and I would just encourage the caller to go back to that school system, set up a meeting with the superintendent, and make those concerns known.
Yeah, thank you for that, Jen. And I would also just say, as someone who is you know, sort of a parent and thinks about you know, kids in school every day, this is not meant to be preachy, but sometimes you hear parents talk about other kids in school who have done some bullying as being sort of beyond reach or beyond hope. Just don't believe that anybody's beyond hope. I mean, we talked to Arno Michaelis on this program last week. He was a white supremacist who started a white supremacist gang in Milwaukee. And now he's written a book with Pardeep Maleka, whose father was killed by that white supremacist gang that he has left behind. And they are preaching against hate. And it took a long time, but there's nobody who is beyond reach, I would just say. You want to add to that? Go ahead.
Yeah, I also think that this is actually, again, one of those bright spots within the Rochester City School District. So the Youth Risk Behavior Survey asks specifically about different kinds of bullying. And what we see is that between 2017 and 2019, reports of bullying in RCSD schools has gone down. And although I can't say definitively the cause of that, it does correspond with more schools adopting restorative practices. Mm-hmm. So I think that is actually you know, something, again, a success happening that we need to highlight and we need to build on.
So let's get that question on how you can help when we think about kids' future and trying to address these areas that need improvement, particularly in the city of Rochester. Ajamu, when you think about businesses, what's the role here? What can happen?
Yeah, this is. I'm glad you asked me this, Evan, because you know the thing that excites me most about this report card is the data moving in the right direction. But after that, it's really this page 20, how you can make a difference. Another question we talked about is why there's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of angry narrative or negative narrative around the district. I'd like to think that part of that angst is people not knowing how they can help. So I really love that we've got this You Can Make a Difference page. And there are several ways to contribute. So from businesses, and I love the first suggestion, provide paid time off for parents to attend school conferences, host book drives. There's several specific strategies that Rock the Future is working on that not only can community stakeholders help, we need community stakeholders to help to really make this work. The other hat I have on in terms of the work I do at ESL is in philanthropy. The recommendation there is to align our funding priorities with the Cradle to Career goals. Again, we all want to help. We all want to make a difference. We can all make a greater difference if we align and focus on the strategies that the data tells us can work, on the strategies that there's a preponderance of partners working on at the same time. Maybe we can learn together that it doesn't work. But if we're unified and focused together, we can all do make so much more progress. Let me make another point, kind of going back to the kind of neighborhood schools, community schools thing, because yeah. I think this is important here because, yes, neighborhood schools are important. Sean made reference to the 80s and 90s when, you know, I said we both grew up. And I'm not from Rochester, I'm from Chicago originally. I didn't go to my neighborhood school. I bused about an hour and a half across town to go to a better school because my neighborhood school was highly neglected, highly impoverished. So, you know, let's not have on rose-colored glasses about the reason. One of the reasons I believe we don't have neighborhood schools, school choice policy was to address the, you know, inequalities that were rampant based on poverty in the past. So when we talk about community schools, it's neighborhood schools and the resources of community embracing, investing specifically to address the challenges that do exist in some of our most challenged neighborhoods so we can lift those communities and those schools up.
Well said. And as we wrap the hour, one more time, Jackie Campbell, send them online to find the full report so people can read it and learn.
RockTheFuture.org. But before I end.
Go ahead.
I want to do a shout out to Barnes & Noble. They are doing a book drive for Rock the Future. You can get some more information about that. But today they called to say you got 8 boxes of books already to pick up. So that's how businesses can get involved.
There you go. Good partnership there. And thank you for the work that you're doing. Jackie Campbell is the director of Rock the Future. Thank you, Jackie, as always.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Stephanie Townsend, the director of research and analytics. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Sean Nelms, the superintendent of East EPO and the chair of the Rock the Future conveners. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Ajama Katwana, who's a WXXI board member and an immediate past chair of Rock the Future. He's the vice president and director of community impact for ESL. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Short break. More connections coming up next.